guys, welcome to episode 72 of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. My God, it's good to be back in the studio. I've missed it.
Yeah.
I've missed this old table, which I've chosen to name Eric.
that's a great table's name.
Eric,
I really missed the mugs.
I miss the mugs, man. Yeah, we don't really, you know, at home, we don't talk that much. We stay in separate rooms, but here at the station, we remember each other and what makes us best, you know? How have you been, my friend? Because we had one episode of, like, separated since you came back from being ill. And now you had a nice weekend away and you're back at work today. How you feeling? What's the vibe?
Pretty relaxed. So I was ill. You talked about it a lot on your solo episode. But I was fit again the beginning of last week, which was perfect because last week was a week off for me.
Right.
And I really could take some time to relax, visiting my parents, going around the Allgäu a bit.
Is that a new hat, by the way?
No, that's not new. The shirt is new. I got that for my birthday.
But I was going to ask, something looks new here. I didn't recognize the shirt.
It's a cute dog. No, it's a German hip-hop / R&B duo's name.
Kung, like
the,
can you
the,
say it?
The U's come more from a Turkish background rather than a Southern German background.
Young. Ah, okay. What's it? Young?
Young Kaffa and Küçük Efendi.
Küçük Efendi. Küçük Efendi. Oh, yeah. Okay. That's cool. I thought the hat looked super fresh too.
Yes.
Feeling good. Nice, man. Well, guys, we have a really cool guest today. I'm glad to be back doing this on video, and I know I've got so much anticipation about talking to our guest. I don't really want to waste too much more time. So
I have one disclaimer.
Please, yeah.
Sadly, because someone reset the mixing board here, we don't have these great sound effects like we did have last time.
That's you just have to
imagine those.
Yeah, that's the only thing. We don't have that great drum roll. No, we had like the clapping. Oh, we had the rim shot.
Yeah.
For the bad jokes. Yeah. That was the best.
I'll see what I can do to get those back for the next recording.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully
since you liked them so much.
I really liked it. It spiced up the production so much with Morgan's episode. It was just like, went through the roof, I thought. But I really, it's cool to be back in the zone because I miss being in this room. It's been a month or so. And hopefully we can keep doing more and more of these. I was really happy with the response for the first one with Morgan. I think it went really well.
Big premiere.
Yeah, Morgan was a fantastic guest. If you guys haven't seen the very first video episode.
You know what we can do now?
What's up?
You can find it here or here or here. We can
link
it somewhere.
Oh, click right there. That's true. We can be those guys now.
We're into all of these this YouTuber shit now.
Oh, that's funny, dude.
But regarding maybe to tell people, like, we had this premiere. Now we're in the second time, and we thought for the moment, it works out for us, like having an audio episode every week, like you guys are used to, and the last week of each month. Have a video episode with a nice guest.
Yeah. We just roll it through for a while, see what the reaction is like, see what the vibe is like, see how people adapt or don't adapt to it. Just get a grasp for a little while about, you know, what this could be, what you guys could make it, depending on how you share it or you know, if you enjoy it. The feedback we might get from, you know, the reviews on Apple or on comments on YouTube, so... We're listening to you, so it's up to you guys to let us know how we're doing, basically. Okay, so very excited about this next guest. It's a very, very, she's a very, very talented singer-songwriter from Sydney, and she's living in Berlin. Ladies and gentlemen, Georgie Fischer. Wait, oh no, I did it again!
Ah! Now.
Hello.
Is she still muted?
Oh, yeah, she is.
Hi.
Sorry, Georgie.
That's cool. Hey, guys.
See, what did I tell you? What did I tell you off mic before? There's bound to be, there's always going to be a handful of these tiny little mistakes. But I think it's what makes the show kind of like authentic a little bit, you know?
I agree. I love a good live show with a couple of mistakes. I think it just makes it, as you said, a little bit more authentic and kind of a bit more fun too.
Yeah, if it's too polished, Well, first off, if it was too polished, it definitely wouldn't be our show.
No.
We can't be polished.
And as a musician, since you cannot make these mistakes on live performances anymore.
That's true.
Kind of.
Yeah, you can't
absorb it and do it somewhere else.
You can't fight through a song with a slightly detuned guitar anymore.
And a slightly detuned
voice or soul or anything. So you have to put it all here, and that's what this podcast is all about. Oh my God. So, Georgie Fisher, it is so nice to have you. Thank you so much for being on Artsy Fartsy Immigrants.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. I would love to just ask right off the bat, so your friends, I'm assuming friends, I don't know how deep friends you might be, with our previous guest of ours, David Gaffney, is that right?
Yes, I am, I would say, quite good friends with Mr. Gaffney.
Okay, how did you guys meet?
We just met in the music scene in Berlin back in sort of around 2015 sort of era. Yeah, 2014-15 was when I had really just arrived in Berlin and was really starting out with my career, and I made my first album here, and I was like out in the bars playing music every single night, and so was Gaffney. We were just both sort of hitting the same venues, and we had all the same friends, really cool group of musician friends, everybody sort of doing the same thing in the same scene, getting our albums made and stuff like that. And yeah, we shared many a beautiful evening listening to music and drinking Sperti beers and stuff like that.
Did you get a chance to check out any of his interviews that he's had on here before?
I'm so sorry, I have not.
I knew it.
Am I a bad friend?
I knew it.
Am I a bad friend? I don't know.
That's so cold-blooded. You know, he wrote to us and he said, oh, you're going to have Georgie on the show. Oh, that's so amazing. You know, she wrote me that she really enjoyed my interview, and she said it was the best interview she'd ever heard.
That is not true.
That's not true. That was a test. That was a test.
Yeah. See, well, you know that I don't lie, because I would have just lied to you just now.
Oh, man. So.
But I'll always wonder if it's probably better for us if our guests haven't listened to our podcast before.
It might be. It might be better to tell a new guest to not listen, because God knows there's some episodes where they might just be like, I can't do that. I can't be on that show. You know, some of these solo episodes where I had some solo episodes on this show where I just ranted about something that was going on in Germany that bothered me, and it either turned some people off or it made some people laugh, but it's like 50-50 chance.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think if you're as an immigrant and you start complaining about the country that you live in, I think half the people are going to say, yeah, I agree, and the other half are going to say, maybe you should go home, bro.
Yeah, exactly. So, get out.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So that's cool. I feel your pain. There are things that are hard to get used to when you're living in another culture. So.
Oh, I'm going to ask you.
Maybe off mic we can complain about that. Or.
I was going to say, I'm going to ask you all about that. I'm going to get into the juice. I'm going to churn that cream into butter with you in a little bit. But first I want to ask, you know, immigrant to immigrant, when did you move officially? Like, what year was it? Because I know that Big City Howl was 2015. So how many was it before that?
That's right. Yeah, it was before that. 2013, I officially got my first Anmeldung. I came here in July or so, 2013. And the idea was to just give Berlin a go for a year. I'd been living in London before that. And I was just enjoying traveling around and seeing different countries and playing music. And I wasn't kind of ready to just go home. And I thought I'd try it out. And I mean, obviously it kind of worked because I'm still here. It's been 8 years now. But
yeah.
It's 2013 and I got my first flat. And I've been here ever since.
Have you been in the same flat since 2013?
No, this is my second. Only two flats. I got really lucky.
That's pretty
lucky. I hear
people
talk all the time about how difficult it is to find a flat in Berlin. And I just got really super lucky with my accommodation situation. Yes. So
I
moved across the hall. So I had like a sublet for a month. And then the girl came back from holiday and I was looking for a permanent flat. And the other flatmates were saying, oh, it's such a shame that you can't move in here because actually we've got a free room, but it's taken already. This guy from Canada is coming next week. And I went, oh, that's such a shame. I'll start looking for a different flat. And then guy from Canada flaked. So I literally moved my suitcase from one room in this apartment across the hall to another room, and then I had my flat.
Man, that's crazy. That's luck, smooth. Huh?
Yeah. Super good luck.
How many apartments have you lived in Munich since you...
I also live in my second right now, but the first one was super shitty and I didn't get out of it for like 2 years.
That was a bad deal, right? Yeah. I remember that. Mm. And I think I've been two.
Yeah,
just two since I moved. But Berlin, you never expect that kind of luck. Like, you never hear about only two, especially in that span of time.
Yeah, especially for someone like myself, who I know a lot of people like myself who kind of just showed up with like not really a plan or any German skills and like no friends or anything. Just like, it's just like, let's just see what happens. So yeah, in that situation, I certainly got very, very lucky with that.
Yeah, that's amazing. And So in 2013, you know, are you living in Sydney at that time?
No, I'd come from London. I'd been in London for 2 years or so.
See, I'm surprised you didn't meet David there, actually.
Well, he was in a different Liverpool. City in the UK.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, he's from Jersey, and he was, I think, right. His story, which I assume you guys talked about on the podcast, about coming over with, what's the artist's name? I can't think of her name at the moment.
Merit Becker. Yeah, that's right.
He came over with Merit Becker. And I think that story of her kind of discovering him playing on the streets was maybe took place in Manchester.
No, it was Liverpool.
Right. So, yeah, we didn't know each other back then, the UK days.
But why were you in London to begin with? Like, what drew you there?
To be honest, I sort of, well, the thing is, I actually was planning to quit music forever.
What?
that was my plan. I was fed up in Sydney. I was a little bit lost in my life, I guess, and kind of sick of trying to be in like 12 different bands and work as a waitress on the side, and nothing ever seemed to be working out, and I was just a bit tired of it all.
Yes.
And I thought, I don't want to do this anymore, and this is just this silly sort of pipe dream being an artist or whatever.
I can relate to that so
much. Yeah, and I went and I left, and I was like, I'm going to go to Europe, travel around for a while. Who cares? Like, I'll do that for 3 months. Please, think about it now.
Like, pretty intense.
Like 10 years ago.
Oh, well played.
Oh my God.
Well played, Europe.
But yeah, I was like, I'll just go just cruise around Barcelona or whatever for a while, and then I'll do something else with my life. Like, I'll come back, I'll go to university, or just pick something else.
Yeah.
But just.
But then it's just the opposite thing happened, and I couldn't be happier, to be honest.
Sorry, just for a second, because I think to all our listeners and viewers, we haven't introduced you properly and jumped right in. Just to sum it up. So you're Australian, you're a musician, and 8 years ago, you moved to Berlin from London. Just to have this all clear for one moment.
Yeah, so I left Sydney in 2011. So it is actually coming up to 10 years now.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Wow.
And regarding moving from London to Berlin, because our last guest, Morgan Wood, told us, like, she feels like Berlin sometimes feels too small for her. Did you also, or do you experience that?
Yeah, actually, because Sydney's a huge, big, bustling city as well, where I grew up, and London felt just about right for me, and Berlin's smaller and slower, and but that's partly what drew me to it, that it's still got that big city atmosphere, without being as cutthroat as places like Sydney and London, where you've really just got to work 100 hours a week just to make the rent.
Right.
You know, that's what I really loved in my early days in Berlin, in that apartment that I luckily got. And I just, I wasn't really even doing much music. I had a bar job 2 nights a week, Friday, Saturdays. And that was enough to cover my rent. Like, I remember when looking on Craigslist at the apartment listings, and I was so confused by the rental prices. I thought it was misprinted, or it must be like per week, not per month, or coming from London, it was so different, especially then. I know it's changed now, But yeah, so in answer to your question, yes, sometimes it feels a bit small, but also I think part of the reason why I like it so much here is that it's way more chilled out than London in many ways. And it just, for the first time, really gave me time to actually think, to sit and think about what I really wanted to do. And
oh, see, that's interesting. I haven't quite heard that perspective on Berlin before. I mean, maybe because when you come from other cities in Germany, it sounds like, or it seems like to me, when they go to Berlin, they're going there for that, I want to say loosely there, like a hustle, like this party mentality to go out, get ripped, meet a lot of people, whatever, do the big scene, and then go back to whatever city or town or something that they had come from. Or maybe they go there to be an artist or to be a designer or to be something creative and like live that big life. But you're the first person I've heard to say that it gave you like space to breathe. That's interesting.
Really, I really did. Like I know what you're saying. I think it depends on your perspective. I had a conversation like this with a friend of mine recently about cycling. Sorry, bear with me.
No. I'm going to go take a little break, but you guys enjoy.
And he said, I don't cycle in Berlin because it's too busy for me. And I went, oh, well, it's the first time I've ever owned a bike is in Berlin because it's flat and they've got bike lanes everywhere. And like cycling in Sydney is like a death wish. You've got to be wearing like head to toe in Lycra and you're cycling in like three lanes of traffic. And here it's super chill. And he went, so you do cycle and I don't cycle for basically the same but opposite reason. Yeah, pretty much. So I guess it just depends on perspective and where you've come from. And if you've come from like working like a minimum wage job in London, trying to make a ridiculously high rent, to coming over here and working significantly fewer hours and just having time to just do things like go for a cycle or just have a coffee with your flatmate or whatever, even if it's going clubbing for 3 days or whatever it is. It's, for me, it was just the freedom not to have to work all the time and be as stressed as I was in London and in Sydney before that. So
was it kind of just a chance when you decided to go abroad that London was your starting place?
No, it's just to do with the visa. That's the thing. That's partly why I ended up in Berlin as well, because the visa is available. Like my first choice was Barcelona. I would have loved to live there, but you can't.
What is the visa situation? Like, what is that connection?
I can't tell you why it exists, but it just does.
It's just great.
It's a great privilege. Like there's an artist visa that exists for only a small handful of countries, and it's not Europe wide. It's just for Germany. And even, I think, just for the state of Berlin, which is partly, shows what kind of a cool city Berlin is, and, you know.
But that's the situation if you're Australian, like.
Yeah, it's Australia, New Zealand, Canada. Okay.
Oh, wow. Man, I
US
screwed
as
up
well.
Not being born there.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry, but I need to ask really dumb because I never
heard of that.
And I never
but
had
hang
to.
On, where is Jordan, aren't you from the US? Did I get that right? Or have you got a passport?
Yeah, I'm from the US,
passport?
But I never heard of this this synchronicity between like Australia and a certain kind of visa in the state of Berlin.
Yeah, it's an artist visa that exists. I think it's offered by definitely the state of Berlin and the state of Hamburg. I'm not even sure about the other 16 states of Germany. And it's not for other countries. Like it's not offered by other places. Like, and the thing is for me, I think it's changed now again, like since I got my first visa, but it stipulates that you can only work as an artist. You need to present a portfolio.
So this is just a standard like artist visa. I thought you were saying, cause I know that is of course, like I just never was able to
I was surprised that you hadn't
qualify
heard of this.
For
okay,
it.
Cool.
Yeah. I was like, man, what the hell? What visa is she talking about here? That's crazy that it's like just for Australia and some places. But no, I get that. I had some friends who did that too. I never really qualified for it when I could have used it. Now I have a different visa, but that actually makes a lot of sense. And it is in here too. It's in Bavaria too.
Okay.
But it's only open to a handful
of countries.
You can't get it if you're from I don't know, most of the countries in the world it's not offered to. That's the thing.
See, I didn't know that. I never knew that. I thought it was if you live in Germany, you can apply for it.
No, it's only for a handful of countries.
That's crazy.
And as an Australian person, like, you don't just get to go to the UK either. Even English people were always quite surprised about that. They were like, but you're the colonies. Can't you just come here if you want to? And that's not the case. Like, you need to get visas to go anywhere. And I think,
Say you're the colonies? You're from the colonies?
Yeah, man, they do. What? They really do.
Rough.
Yeah, bro.
Damn.
They still say stuff like that over there.
Jeez.
Glad they're out of the U. What?
Yeah.
But talking about Sydney, because I feel like we never have talked so much about cities outside of Europe and the States, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
For you, besides the sheer size, etc., what's the biggest difference you experienced between Sydney and Berlin?
Okay, I'd say culturally a huge difference is the influence from Asia that Sydney has that's not really as present in Europe. That's something that I think really characterizes Sydney is like a huge Chinese population, mm-hmm. Japanese population, Korean. It's like it really sort of just it's a completely different feel. It doesn't really feel very European. People say Melbourne is more European than Sydney.
Okay.
But yeah, that's one thing I'd say that's a big difference. And I mean, other differences are maybe kind of obvious, like just the landscape, like the beaches and stuff like that. But I guess that kind of goes without saying. The environment and the different landscape and trees and stuff like that. But yeah, culturally, I think that's the biggest difference. Yeah.
It's like the trees, you know.
The trees, yeah. I never heard someone
describe that. Jordan, what's the biggest difference between New Orleans, Louisiana, and Munich? Well, there's definitely some different trees.
Yeah, there definitely are, yeah.
Sorry, my phone was ringing.
You know, since it's on the other side of the world, the trees are growing the other way around.
And they paint bricks differently. So the streets are smoother here.
yeah.
No, but you're right. It's like all the small things, you know, all the drops make a puddle, and that's the difference. Like these little things, you notice them after time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the weather is a pretty big one.
That's a big difference.
People always used to ask me, like, why did you move to Germany when the weather's so nice in Australia? And I was always like, oh, well, you know, like there's different cool things about Germany and about Berlin that Sydney doesn't have. And like, it's got this amazing like club scene and music scene and the culture and da da da. And like, honestly, as every year passes, I feel more and more like the Germans who ask me that question. And I ask myself the same. I'm like, what am I doing here? It's so sunny back home.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to go to Australia. I've never been. I'm dying to go. I would definitely ask you some nice things to visit if I ever went to Sydney. But, man, I've been to Berlin a few times, and there is just this kind of thing about Berlin or about the UK that just this...
Berlin or the UK?
The connection between them, this thing that bothers me is the weather.
Okay.
It's a lot of cloudy days. It's a lot of wind. You know, it gets to me because, I mean, even in Munich, we had a stretch like this not too long ago, like last week or the week before. And I was getting like homesickness from it because New Orleans around this time, it's, you know, 30 degrees. It's really sunny, like blank skies down the list, as I imagine Australia to be, but hotter. And it's just like, give me that sun, you know? Does that ever get to you? Like, do you ever get like homesick for this?
Well, like, talking about Germany compared to the UK, like in general, I think Germany has better summers than the UK.
Summers, yeah,
but they're
that's true.
Still very short compared to what I'm used to. Like in Sydney, it's like it's hot, it's blue skies, and then it gets slightly less hot for like 2 months, and then like that's it. That's the seasons, you know. It's just basically beautiful and sunny all the time, and then occasionally we'll get a really intense kind of subtropical storm and then it goes back to sunny and blue skies. So it's certainly very different,
mm-hmm.
but I enjoy the way the seasons change in a more definitive way over here. Like you really feel like it's springs and autumn particularly, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. where everything changes so drastically, whereas it doesn't really change that drastically at home. So for me, it's kind of a novelty. Like, I kind of really like it. Having said that, when it's a summer like this current one, then that's when I'm like, come on, guys. Like, give me like a little bit of some sunshine.
Give me something,
like,
please.
Yeah, like, please stop raining.
Yeah, please stop raining.
Yeah, but
oh my gosh.
But since it cannot be the weather, what did make you stay in Berlin so long?
Look, it's just a cool city to live in, to be an artist. It's so creative. Like, it's full of all different people doing all different stuff. And it's a place where if you tell someone you're doing some kind of project, the answer is like, cool, that sounds awesome. Can I get involved somehow? Or like,
right.
Nice, when's your show? I'll come. Whereas I've never lived in a place where like being artistic is so encouraged before.
Right.
It's very different, culturally right? different from where I come from, which is really just like a little bit more like if you're an artist, it's like, I don't know. It's not considered like a real profession, and it's like you're just... I feel like people... think of if in order to be a successful artist, you need to be super famous, and you're either super famous or you're like
not an artist.
A complete failure, and there's nothing in between.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Whereas there's this different understanding of the arts here in Germany that I love. That makes made me want to stay. I think is the main point.
I was going to ask you these major differences between the music scene between Sydney and Berlin. I mean, is it like this? This idea, you said yourself when we started the episode that you had considered quitting completely. I mean, so what were some of these, like, do you have some, a story in particular of a moment where you were told something or you received something regarding your music career where you thought like, man, I don't care enough to accept this kind of, you know, whatever anymore?
I'm not sure if there would be a particular, like one particular thing, but mm-hmm. To describe it in general, it's sort of like for what I do as a singer-songwriter, the most of the gigs in Sydney consist of playing cover songs in a pub where you're sitting in the corner and people are just talking over you. And mm-hmm. Again, it's a cultural thing. It's like they're still enjoying it in their way, but they're not going to stop their conversation
right.
To listen to you.
Right.
Like I've had nights sitting in the corner in Sydney where I'm thinking, this is the worst, and you know, everyone hated it, and they were just talking, and then someone will come up and say, "Wow, that was like the best music, and you were so great, and you really made our night." But they'd just been sort of like chatting, and I thought they were ignoring me the whole time.
Right.
So it is a sort of I guess it's a cultural difference.
Mm-hmm.
But so
people are not
still
coming.
I think.
Sorry.
Yeah. It's just not really like your own original music is not encouraged in a way that it is here.
Yeah. I mean, I've had that
experience.
It's
not as well paid either. And as well, so it's just a different thing.
I had that experience like a million times over in New Orleans. It was the same idea. Like I have this one specific concert experience that I had in Munich, one of my very first concerts ever. And comparing that to almost every concert I had in New Orleans, of course, you know, I'm imagining in your experience too, you play enough concerts, there's gonna be a handful of like good ones that you're like, I'm really happy with that. But then you have that one German concert where whether it's 10 people or 100 people or more, and they're actually engaged and they're looking at you and they're not talking and they're giving, you know, they're giving you all of their attention and their hard-earned time and sometimes even their hard-earned money. And really respecting the art of it and the effort of it, even if it may not be totally their thing, and giving you a big rounding of applause to support you, and then being silent after that. I mean, I remember that concert. It was for Hauskonzerte here in Munich.
Yeah,
we were playing in this old greenhouse for like 30 or 40 people, and this artist had come through from the UK. They needed a support slot. Somehow, through some connection or some way, they got me in there, and I had only been in Munich for just a few months, got the spot, and I remember I finished the first song, and then they applauded, and then when they stopped clapping, it was so dead silent, no talking, no drinks moving, no shuffling in the seat, that I actually like nervously like burst like laughing. I was like, like I just couldn't actually, I'd never had that experience before ever. You know, where it's just that dedicated to like, shh, the artist is playing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a huge difference. And it's so incredible as an artist to play for an audience like that, who's dead silent and engaged.
Yeah.
And tells you when you finished, you know, what particular lyrics they liked from which song and stuff like that. Yeah.
It's such a different vibe.
But that's...
It is a huge different vibe, yeah.
That's super interesting for me growing up as a musician here in Germany, and I was playing in like multiple bands until I was, I don't know, 21 or something. And from the age of 14, me and my band, so we always played our original music, how good it was, whatever. but we were playing a lot of shows like that, and you always had a few people, but those were super interested. And I think at that young age, that drove me to like, yeah, fuck this. I want to have more people like attending the shows I'm playing. So I was rather looking for the kind of situations you describe you don't like being somewhere and entertaining people while they do something else, just because I kind of like that there are more people and more people possibly are listening to my music. And I think I never worshipped enough,
mm-hmm.
like you mentioned, that even if it's just 10 people, come to your show and pay a few bucks and give you feedback on what you've done, how worthy that is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a matter of perspective again. So.
Yeah, maybe. Sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Man, it's so crazy. And now that you've been in Berlin for all this time, you know, before the pandemic, how, you know, what was your, okay, so you had, let's just go back a little bit. So, you released your first album, self-recorded, Big City Howl. Is that right?
Self? What do you mean, self-recorded?
Like, did you do everything yourself on that one, or did you produce it in a studio? Like, or
we did it. Yeah, I did it in a studio. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Hmm.
I wasn't sure. Like, sometimes people play. I found out the other day that Sufjan Stevens played like.
You have to ask these kind of things these days.
You have to ask, you know. I found out the other day that Sufjan Stevens had played like almost every single instrument on this Illinois album from 2005. And he played some of the things in his apartment. And I was like, there's like orchestras on this record. It's crazy.
That's amazing. That's cool. To be honest, I'm sort of going for that vibe this time around. Partly because of the pandemic, I've been just like in my little studio just playing everything myself for my new demos, but no, for that one we did it with a band. We recorded everything live, tracked it all live.
Oh, that's nice. Cool. That's always fun.
So couple of overdubs afterwards, like the backing vocals were overdubbed and maybe a guitar solo here and there, but otherwise the whole album was recorded in a day and a half just in the studio.
That's cool.
That's really cool. How long did it take you to prepare for that?
That's a great question. How long did it take? I'm going to say like 2 months, probably about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we recorded in July. And yeah, I was putting the band together in the early part of that year, 2015. And we were doing like one or two rehearsals a week, getting ready for the recording and for the show. The show was in September. All in all, I think with pre and post production, it took about 6 months.
Did you already have the songs? Like, how long had you had these songs written? Were they
the
older songs?
The songs were a collection. Some of them were new, but some of them had been kicking around for a few years. Yeah, that was a sort of pulled together some stuff that didn't make it onto the EP that I recorded in London, and some songs like I think probably the 3 or 4 of my favorite songs from the record were written here in Berlin during that first year or two that I lived here.
What was the kind of theme running through these songs that you had just mentioned, like after moving to Berlin? Because I recognized in my own songwriting that like just that first year or two after moving to Germany, there was kind of this more common theme of like isolation because I didn't really have any friends yet. And when I go back and listen to them, I can see this kind of common thread between them. Did you notice that at all with your own songwriting?
It's a good question. I suppose, to be honest, I think if there sorry, was...
Sorry, we lost you. Could you just start back? We just lost you for a second. Sorry, could if you just you could start back. Sorry.
Have you got me back? I think it's my internet.
Yeah,
sorry.
We have you. We have you.
Cool. Yeah, maybe the common theme might have been nostalgia, actually. I think I was writing like about my old life.
Like your life back in Australia?
Yeah, like situations that I'd had in London or Sydney. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was it just because everything was it because everything after you'd moved was gone, or was it because you were kind of scared of what was to come?
I don't know.
Maybe a combination of both.
Maybe it's back to that thing of I had some time to think, just to reflect.
There you go. Yeah.
You know.
How much would you say that your style has like developed or changed, like to your liking? You know, what things have gotten better for you or changed for you from Big City Howl to, for example, Separate Realities or The Queen, like your most recent singles?
I would say, yeah, like stuff in terms of my style, like I've tried to improve my songwriting just in a way of making it a little bit more complex. Not that that always necessarily makes a better song, but yeah, I was
challenging yourself.
Big City Howl was a bit more like, you know, just find a cool sounding three chords and then like, you know, write some lyrics over that. And Bob's your uncle.
The JP technique, I like to say.
So I think I've really, over the last few years, I've tried to improve my skills as an instrumentalist rather than as a singer and songwriter, because I sort of plateaued on the guitar at the age of about 15 and never really got any better.
Same.
And so I've been trying to just like play a little bit more intricately and like use different melodies and try to play around with modulations and things like that in my songwriting.
That's where it gets really interesting, like kind of opening up these secret little doors between chords that you've known your whole life. You're like, I didn't know you were there.
Totally. Yeah. I was like, I know what like this part of the guitar neck does. Now what does the rest of it do?
Well, it goes pretty far down, huh?
Yeah. Damn. So, I'd say, I guess I've just tried to improve my musicianship since then. Whether I've succeeded or not, I'm not quite sure. I'm probably going to be on that journey the rest of my life. But
I think we all
are. Yeah, I guess it's the main thing.
Yeah.
Maybe
also it's
a
about.
Bit more into... Yeah, you've got to keep learning or else it gets boring, right? So.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. Yeah, just keeping going with it.
So
like challenging yourself more, becoming a better instrumentalist, sort of, you know, growing a bit more as musician. And what do you think, like, do you think your lyrics have a, I don't know, with certain projects you do, like the is it pronounced Deciduous EP?
Oh yeah, the Deciduous EP. Yeah.
Deciduous. I'm I'm really, to have a podcast, I'm really bad with words, so I had to read that one twice. But like between Deciduous and Big City Howl and like the new singles, do you find that your lyrics have changed perspective now that you've lived in Berlin for so long?
Oh, I don't know.
Like
maybe.
Now is it more about just like regular life? Like this song is about a heartbreak. This song is about a memory, or is it like concept based, the new songs, or?
Kind of. Yeah, it's a bit more concept based. Like, like Separate Realities is an interesting one because it sounds like a song about a heartbreak. But actually, I wrote it about my stalker. I had a stalker for like 2.5 years.
Well, boys and girls, put down the paper, take off your shoes. We found ourselves the next segment. Georgie's stalker, please explain.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's sort of, listening to the song, you kind of go, oh yeah, that's a song about a breakup. But in the actual fact, writing that song was part of the process of ending this quite stressful situation of having this unwanted person in my life. And I wrote the song, and in writing it, it made me realize what I had to do. So it was kind of an important process for me to actually write it. So basically, like,
Well, let's start at the beginning. When did you get a stalker? And was it a man or a woman? Were they writing letters?
Yeah, it was a woman, which is not usually what people expect. But
yeah, that's uncommon, I'd imagine.
It was just like she would write me like 10 emails a day. I would get posts from her.
Whoa.
Like I had stacks and stacks and stacks of posts. I ended up with like half my cellar was full of stuff that she would send me.
Oh my God.
That's crazy.
How did she find you?
It was just really weird stuff as well. It was like nothing really made any sense. She'd send me like all different packages full of random bits and pieces of stuff. One day I'd get like a broken hard drive and a photograph of some family I'd never met before. And then the next day I'd get like Madonna's biography written by her brother, translated into German. And then like whatever. Like it's just,
oh my God.
None of it made any sense. It was just old stuff. And she would show up to all of my shows and act in a very strange way. And I think the strangest thing maybe the scariest thing I ever got from her was a hand-drawn map of my apartment and the surrounding area.
Creepy.
Yeah.
As far as I know, she never like actually came to my place of residence, but she would show up at all of my shows and just do weird stuff. And like then she would send me like love letters and things occasionally as well. And my whole thing was just like, I'll just wait till this goes away. Surely she'll get sick of it at some point. That's my whole like.
Oh man.
And at some point during this period, it was over 2 years. It started around the release of Big City Hal. In fact, I think that was the first gig that she came to.
Okay, so she became like a stalker through your music, like watching you perform.
Yeah, and she started out as like what I like to call a super fan, which is a very positive thing.
Sounds good.
Have you many of those?
Well, I have a few, yeah. And shout out super fans. And people who came up and say, I love your music. You know, I was so touched by your performance. It was fantastic. Like, can I buy a CD? Have a great night. See ya. Like those.
Right.
And then she sort of like crossed that boundary. Yeah, and then I kind of just didn't know how to deal with it. And there were a few times when I'd seen her at the shows and I'd said, like, you've got to stop this. This has to end. Mm-hmm. And she would say, I know, yeah, I know, you're right. But then it would sort of keep going. And at some point during this period, I went home to Australia and I was gone for some months. Like, I was gone for, like, maybe 4 or 5 months. And I returned to Berlin and I had a pile of posts like you just wouldn't believe. Like,
oh my God.
Yes.
Did you go through everything and read everything she ever sent you, or were you just
almost
putting it to the side?
At some point I stopped opening them. But eventually I kind of went through most of it. Yeah,
but why is that? I'm just interested. What? If you know this is a situation you don't like, and it has gotten over a point where you could say, okay, this is something normal for a fan or someone that admires you to do. What keeps you still opening like boxes and letters you get?
I don't know. Just curiosity, maybe. I'm not sure.
Mm. I know what you mean.
Like I found the whole situation very curious because I couldn't figure out like. She wasn't on social media. She must have had access to Facebook or something because she knew where my shows were. But I couldn't figure out if she had any social media accounts. And she was never with anybody. She just was sort of a mystery to me. Maybe, yeah, I'm not sure why. I think I eventually went through everything sort of after it was over. But, yeah, when I wrote the song, I just went, wow, I've really got to, like, I couldn't figure out what to do because I couldn't really, like, go to the police or anything. Technically, she hadn't done anything.
Yeah.
Did she ever follow you on tour or anything, or was it just
Berlin-based? No, just the Berlin shows.
Okay, wow.
And then one night she kind of, like, pushed me. Like, she did something physical.
Mm-hmm. At a show or where? At your house?
Yeah. at a show. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And that's when I kind of thought, okay,
now it's getting, this is,
now it's something, now it's getting real.
Yeah.
And all that I ended up having to do, like, as I said, I told her like a few times, like, this has to stop. You need to stop doing this. And I started to kind of be quite harsh with her. I was like, I don't read your emails. I archive them all. I never see them. Mm-hmm. I don't open your posts. Like, stop this, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, one night I just was super harsh. I just was really mean, which felt horrible.
Sure, yeah.
But it worked. I never heard from her again.
Wow.
Okay, yeah. Because the next thing I wanted to ask, how did you make it stop? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's the answer. I really just told her to stop, but I just did it in a way that was so harsh. Okay. Like, you know, and then it, and
that
she
must
just
have been really, really,
she just nodded and walked away, and that was it. I never heard from her again. Yeah, so.
Crazy story. I also imagine it must be such a strange feeling when you, and I guess you're playing many shows in Berlin, and you, every time you already know or kind of expect, okay, my stalker's gonna be here,
right?
Well, yeah. I'll be on stage again and again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember one time when I was playing a really small intimate venue in Berlin, which mostly is what I play, and I saw her walk in. And I was like, I've got to become more successful so there's a fucking backstage.
That's such a good motivation. Oh, man.
Tell us, what did you drive to become such a superstar? I just wanted to get to a place where I have a backstage.
I had to get away from Dana. She knew where I lived.
Oh, yeah. And that actually is the reason why she got my address is because I had never, ever considered that anything like this would happen. And she'd ordered a CD from me and I'd put my return address on the back of the envelope. Just like a good, normal, good citizen who's considerate of the post office.
Mm.
Just never considered that it would come back to me. So, yeah, I've worked out a way to get around that now. I never do that anymore.
Like, no. No.
Yeah.
How do you handle these kind of things? Like,
I mean, I never had a super fan who stalked me.
No.
But, not yet.
But I mean, you also kind of are still not that huge as an artist that you kind of send out the stuff on your own, etc.
Yeah. I mailed stuff today.
but do you have your address on any of these orders or anything?
It depends for the orders. If it's people that have shown, it's weird, but it almost sounds kind of harsh to say, but if they are people who have shown good behavior routinely by how I feel that they might react, like on social media, or if they write an email in a certain voice, one email in a certain voice, or they come to the concert and they say something in a certain way and I recognize them from how they contact or how they purchase something, then I don't feel as worried about doing it. I never had the issue that she had, but... No, I never had any concerns at all. It's not been that many people who've ordered things for me to ship, but normally the shipping is, you know, to certain people that I know anyway, you know.
Yeah.
But with, and thankfully I never had that situation. But I was just thinking if there had been anything weird in general that had ever happened. I mean, there is this one guy that writes me a lot. But not quite like Dana.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, I have some people who like write me like a bit too much as well. But this was a bit. Yeah, I've never heard of anything like this happening before either. Even to other friends or like, one other female performer that I know did have a situation with a man where it was a little bit more like. Intense and actually got a bit violent, which was awful.
Yeah.
But that's the only other situation I know of where there's been someone who's been at that level, like of just like daily.
I mean, that's there's way more going on with her than just being so obsessed with your music. You know, it's like she's got some issues. But really glad nothing. Like, I'm really glad nothing more dangerous than this. Push happened, you know?
Yeah, me too. Yeah. who knows how it could have turned out.
I mean, speaking of like super gripping stories, I do, you know, I did hear from this little birdie that, you know, one of your songs was written about a certain coming out story in Slovenia.
Oh, yeah.
And if you were comfortable talking about that, I think that would be super interesting.
Sure, of course. Yeah, that was Just Be, the video that we've just watched. Mm-hmm. That's a personal story, something that happened to me in Slovenia. Yeah, I went to visit a friend of mine that I've been working with in London, and we had a night out, and I identify as bisexual. I've been out as bisexual since I was a teenager, and I'm very comfortable with that and never had any sort of issue with coming out to my family or anything. Mm-hmm. So I've always been very open about it, and having grown up in Australia, especially in Sydney, where there's a huge gay scene, and it's just, you know, not that I can speak for everybody, of course, people still experience discrimination, but as a culture, it's a big part of Sydney culture, and it's something that I've always felt very accepted for in my personal experience. So to meet someone like I did in Slovenia, this young girl who felt that she was not able to tell anybody, not her parents, not her friends, not anybody in the small village that she came from, that she was gay, because they would have kicked her out or ostracized her or possibly worse. I don't really know. I just felt so, I don't know, moved by her situation, because it was, she, you know, she was just a young girl, but it was so far away from mine.
How did you meet again?
We just met in a bar. Like, she'd come from her small town to the big city with her friend, and her friend was the one person who knew that she was gay. She was 18, I think, or 19 at the time. And she was just talking about it with me and like with the friend, and you know, my friend that I'd gone to see was a guy, straight guy, and he was like, yeah, she can't tell anyone, like, not in this country, you know, there's no way that that's gonna be accepted, especially not in the place where she's from. I know there, I've been there, kind of thing.
Okay.
And she was terrified, you know, she just was like, I don't know what to do, I don't know what to do with my life. And her and I ended up like spending the night together and having a one night stand, I guess, in Ljubljana. And I just thought she was really sweet, and I wrote the song about her and about the night that we spent together, and about hopefully her being able to find a better future, maybe somewhere else. Like,
I was gonna ask, have you ever been able to get in contact with her ever?
I never
again?
Saw her again.
Okay, wow. Mm-mm. I'm curious what happened to her. I hope she did find an escape of some kind.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's a pretty, pretty, pretty wholesome story, because I don't know how to say this as a straight white cis guy, but I know a lot of places and situations in Europe where I could imagine how hard it could be.
Oh yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
I come from a pretty conservative rural area where I at least experienced what people have to live through when coming out and after it, and how it affects their future. So I think this is a pretty, pretty wholesome story and a pretty cool way to break those those circumstances up at least a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like when I sort of asked the two women that star in the video are friends of mine, and they at the time were a real couple. They've since broken up, but they were a real couple. And I asked them, I said, look, you know, I've written this song, and like I want to sort of make a video about it, and do you girls want to be in the video? And I thought, like, I would want to talk through everything with you and make sure that you're comfortable and stuff. And And they both were like, you're telling my story, girl. I'm there. I'm in there. Like, they both could relate. You know, they both came from a smaller town and had that experience in Germany coming out and having to, like, to tell their parents, and they both moved to Berlin. And so I think it's something that a lot of people, unfortunately, even in 2021, still go through as young people. Mm-hmm. So I guess
It's crazy.
That was just my way of talking about it.
That's beautiful. That's really beautiful. And the song is great, and it's really cool to know that story is the, you know, the foundation behind it.
Hmm.
I'm going to ask a little bit about some immigrant perspectives on Germany. But just before I do, I didn't really ask yet, and it's kind of like the go-to question for, it's not like a prize-winning journalistic question here, but what are some of your musical inspirations? Because when I listen to your music, I hear so many different kinds of artists, like little glimpses and little reflections of artists here and there, but not quite enough to say that you're like taking from anyone, which is a great kind of place to be in as an artist. Like, who do you say that you really enjoy, you know? Like,
am I allowed to turn this question back around on you and ask?
Absolutely not. This is my show and I will end it right now.
I'm so curious as to which artists you like were reminded of. It's okay, I'll go first.
You first,
I'll interview you after this.
We're gonna edit that later, right?
Okay, so like, short story is I grew up with 90s grunge, absolutely loved like Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Smashing Pumpkins,
mm-hmm.
All this kind of stuff. And yeah, I was super into that as a teenager. And then when I turned around 18 and stuff, I started to get really into hip hop. And I loved Tribe Called Quest and Lauryn Hill and all this kind of golden era hip hop stuff, I guess. And yeah, I was sort of around that. I suppose I got into more like dance music. I remember like I used to love Groove Armada and stuff like that. But then, yeah, I don't know. Now I sort of listen to anything, but those were my kind of main stages. And like, and hip hop, like many people, I discovered soul music off the back of hip hop, like through sampling and stuff like that. And like, I remember like I first listened to Donny Hathaway because I heard a Donny Hathaway sample in the Wu-Tang song, and like it just nice. This kind of thing kind of. So I started to get really into soul, and like through that I listened to jazz, and I don't know, I kind of, my tastes have changed over the years. But
I was going to ask, like, do you have any like modern artists nowadays that you say are like really interesting you in the business? Because of course I was going to say similar artists like Lauryn Hill was already on my list, but like with this jazzy sort of almost 90s kind of mix, it's such an interesting like new take on these little, on these kind of older, old fashioned styles. Like, is there anyone now that you say?
Yeah,
like
oh, you know. I think it's coming back around again. Like this, mm-hmm. like there are artists who are, you know, 20 or so now who sound like Lauryn Hill used to sound. Mm-hmm. People like, doing, well, you know, with a modern twist on it, like there's a few like modern soul singers that I love. Charlotte Day Wilson's one of them.
Okay.
From Canada. She produces all her own music and has an incredible voice and just does it all herself. I'm really fascinated by people who do it all themselves. I love another New York artist called Amber Mark. Who does the same. There's a super famous artist from Sweden who I'm embarrassed because I don't know how to pronounce her name. I always see it written. She's Swedish Iranian, and I think it's like Snow Allegra or something like that. I just don't know how to say it.
Have you heard anything? Like, I'm not sure.
I could write it down for you.
Yeah, you may have to.
There's lots of like particularly female kind of soul R&B singers that I listen to now that I think remind me a lot of that older music, you know, from the 90s and beyond.
Nice.
Yeah.
I could totally imagine like some of the inspirations you had listed. I could hear that. Okay. I want to ask about some perspectives being here.
I'm still waiting for you to get interviewed.
Well, we might get to it if we have time.
Like, what did you hear in my music? I'm super curious.
No, I was just saying like that. Like you like this 90s grunge, like, but just a hint of that, like, not quite grunge, but like this 90s songwriter style with obviously a lot of soul influence. I did have like a Lauryn Hill written down on this other piece.
We
of
have to mention Alanis Morissette, of course.
That would be probably one of the biggest.
I mean,
yeah.
Every teenage girl in the 90s was in love with Alanis Morissette, myself included. So
yeah, you can really hear that. And but it's so interesting too. Like it has this Morissette. It's like these moments of this, like with the melody or with the progression or with the guitar tones or something, or like just the vibe in general. But then, you know, your singing takes this very soulful and very interesting jazz twists and turns, like these unexpected moments and these really pleasant surprises. And that's why it was so hard for me to find like this exact thing, because you're doing your thing and that's really special, you know?
Cool. Thanks, man. That's a really nice compliment.
I don't just get any old Patsy on this show.
But I have one question for both of you, because I guess also privately, I never really asked you, but
6 foot one.
Are there any German artists you guys have gotten into since living here for some years?
Yeah, actually on the Ego FM show, I did a show where the segments were like making fun of little German behaviors, but in the middle segment,
I thought that was the whole concept of the show.
Yeah, basically all I do. But in the middle segment on the jukebox, on Sundays I have this show on a radio station, and I talk on the segments, and then in the middle I have a thing called Jordan's Jukebox where I pick three songs and talk about them. And for that day where I made fun of the Germans, I thought, you know, it wouldn't be fair if I didn't pick three German artists that I like. So I picked Die Höchste Eisenbahn.
Mm-hmm.
I really like a handful of their songs a lot. Angela Augs from Munich. And of course, I had to pick Cosma Joy. She's just incredible. Yeah.
Cool.
And you, Georgie?
My hands down, my favorite German band is Turbostadt.
Oh.
Do you know them?
Yeah, I don't know that. What's that?
You go.
It's like Northern German punk.
Nice. Okay.
And I love them so much. That's so awesome. Cool.
That's unexpected. That's cool.
Who else? Actually, I want to cover one of their most recent singles. I'm gonna make sure I send it to you guys once I do it.
Yeah,
send
it.
Awesome, yeah.
Yeah.
Are they more current?
And
are they older? Have they been around?
They're pretty
for
old. Long? They've been around 20 years.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, also, I think. Yeah. But they released a new album. Like, they're still active. Actually, I've got a heartbreaking story to tell you about a Turbostadt concert.
Oh. So, I want to hear it.
I'm in.
Well, it's only a short one. Basically, they would have been the last proper show that I would have seen before the pandemic, for the lockdown in March 2020. Mm-hmm. But they played two shows in Berlin, and I bought tickets and I showed up at the door, and the guy was trying to buzz this thing with the scanner and it wasn't working. And it turned out that I had bought a ticket for the previous night and my ticket was no longer valid.
No,
I couldn't get in, and I'd fucked up the date, and I was standing there like an idiot.
Oh no.
And I was so sad, and I was like, please, can you let me in anyway? And he said, no. And then I went, oh, well, I guess I'll just go buy a vinyl and go and have a beer. And then I went to the merch desk, and they were like, we've sold out of vinyl.
No!
And that was on like the maybe the 24th of February or something like that. And like that would have been like my last big like punk show.
Damn
but I
it.
didn't I messed up the dates.
Instead, your last concert that you saw was like the week before that at some cafe with like some tone deaf dude playing a detuned guitar while he plays Wonderwall.
Exactly.
Or some German Schlager.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God.
Totally.
Who else? So you got Turbostadt and who else?
So I'm just trying to think of the guy's name. What's the guy that sings Mein Haus am See? You know that song?
Peter Fox.
Peter Fox, that's right. Yeah, I like him as well. And the other band is also an indie band, but I'm also struggling to think of the name of them. But they're also from like the early 2000s. And they did that song. They got a girl singer and they did that song. Bitte gib mir nur ein Wort. You know that one?
Mm-hmm.
I might have to look it up. I can't remember the name right now. Sorry, my brain's being
stupid. And I'm also struggling for the name.
You got it, Fronny?
Wir sind Helden.
Yeah, exactly.
I also forgot about it. Yeah.
Thank you,
Froni.
So there you go. That goes to show you something. I like German indie music, Indian punk.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool.
That's cool.
Who was the guy who did the? Do 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 do. You know that, huh? Tom Schilling, isn't it?
Schilling.
Tom Schilling.
Chilling. Dude.
What is that going on with that?
I'm not sure. As far as it looks, we have professional audio there.
Why does it scroll up there? Can I just get you to go away? Oh. Nice. Okay.
Can we still hear you, Georgie?
I can hear you guys.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. Yeah, we just had a little thing on the screen. We wanted to get rid of that. Right. That's cool. Okay. So how are you with... in general, and be honest here, with the German language. And there's no pressure here to be like,
you have to be fluent, it's been 8 years.
Like, we're not that kind of show.
No, actually, I'm pretty good.
Damn it!
Happens every time.
I gave you every opportunity.
Every time. Also, the last guest we had, right, Morgan Wood, was like, yeah, I always can do it. I'm fluent in it. I've given German classes to other British people. It's super fine. John's always sitting like...
Like, yeah, me too.
How long have you been here, Jordan? Sorry, this is the reverse interview starting now.
This is my sixth year. It's my sixth year.
The sixth, yeah, cool.
Oh, man. Yeah. But yeah, for me, it's like I'm really just not someone who ever picked up anything good with language at all. At all. Mm-hmm. I never had a good ear for it. I never had a good memory for it. It's not like a muscle I can really like work every day.
That's why you write songs.
And that's why I write songs. Yeah, exactly. But it's just like if I have something that I need to say, I tend to get hung up on the pronunciation of it because I have this, I think as a musician, you probably get that too. Like you hear how it should sound. So you want it to sound like that, the same way you record played a certain way or something's on a certain beat, you want to get it exactly on that beat. And if I don't, I stumble over myself, then I get insecure, then I don't even say what I wanted to. You know what I mean? It's not like I don't know any German, but I'm very shy. I'm very, very shy with it.
I understand. It's like, it's a terrifying thing to speak another language. And I think for me, it was just... I was really, I just kept going, like just kept trying. And it's like, it's just knowing that you sound like an idiot is really hard. Like,
yeah, that's the thing, right?
And you sound like an idiot for like a good 3 years, you know, it's not just like,
yeah.
So yeah, I feel, yeah, I do. I'm lucky to have had a couple of really good teachers in my life as well. Not really. I went to study German for a couple of months too, but mostly I've taught myself with just the help of friends. I've happened to have a couple of good friends that have helped me helped me a lot just over the years with it.
You have to pass any language qualification tests or anything?
I might have to do that coming up. My next visa appointment is in August and I'm gonna go for the residency, which means I have to do an integration course and pass. I think it's a B1 level.
Sounds like that's totally doable for you. I was going to ask if you already knew if you were in the C level or something.
I don't know. I'm not sure. Like, I'm very happy to speak about most things and like my grammar is kind of okay, and I teach myself, and I've been to the Volkshochschule a couple of times. But yeah, I'm not sure if I'd pass a C1. I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, B1 is totally, totally understandable, though. That's I think that's a great foundational
B1
place to
cool,
be.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
And what are some quirks, like, as an Australian being in Berlin? What were a few things where you saw German people do something a certain way, or eat a certain thing, or drink a certain thing, or are you just someone who doesn't notice or care about that sort of stuff? You strike me as someone who's like,
of course, there's plenty of stuff that is like.
I wish you just pulled up a big scroll and was like, well,
bring out my list.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, one of the most common things on all those BuzzFeed articles is always the Met Eagle. You know those things.
The Met.
Which I've never actually. The Met Eagle. You don't know about this?
I don't think so. Met
Flo, Eagle? You got to fill them in. Come on.
Okay, it's like half a semmel with like raw minced meat on it that is shaped like a hedgehog. Is that a proper description?
That's great, yeah. And it's got like you put the Salzstange inside, right?
Yeah.
How have I never seen that before?
Well, I've personally
it's rather thing in northern Germany.
Seen one either. That's the thing. I've personally never seen one either. But the first time I discovered Met itself, or Hackepeter as it's sometimes called,
okay,
which is, you know, the cured like minced meat. I remember the first time I saw it, and I was like, my brain is telling me that I can't eat that. It's going to make me sick because it's raw, but actually it's not. It's salted and cured and stuff like that. So that's one thing that, like, it took me ages to get used to, but I actually kind of like it now.
I mean, I do love me some raw meat.
We have eaten one of these when we played a show in Gelsenkirchen.
We did?
Because it was kind of the only catering they offered.
Yes, in case.
Classic.
Yeah, right. We tried it because it's all
Germany,
that.
You can have some raw meat with some bread.
Yeah.
Here you go, you lions.
You're a vegetarian. Too bad. Go play somewhere else.
Oh, there's some grass in the field over there.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That was a big one. And then what else? I mean, I think the biggest thing when I moved here was just and I guess being from the US, you probably have this as well, because for Australians, like, just part of the greeting is to say, how are you? It's like just as normal as saying hello. Mm-hmm. You're just like, hi, how are you? Good. Yourself? Cool. And then you move on with the interaction.
Right, right.
Whereas in Germany, that's not part of it. And it's a bit weird to say wie geht's to somebody that you don't know, like in a shop or whatever. You
right,
say
yeah,
that.
You would say, hey, how you doing?
No, yeah, you just don't say it. And so I remember when I first was visiting a friend in Munich, before I even thought about coming to Germany to live, and I said, hey, can you teach me some German? I had, you know, no idea. And she went, cool, yeah, what do you want to learn? I said, why don't you teach me how to say, how are you? Because to me, that was like the most normal, basic greeting.
Yeah.
And she went, well, you say, wie geht's, but like, you don't say it. And I was like, what? And then she sort of explained that, you know, was different. So I think that in that specific thing, but also that as a representative of just like a very different way of interacting with strangers was something that I think I'm still not really used to it. Even after living here for 8 years, like this kind of standoffishness that you have with other people. Cause in Australia, it's like everyone is your best friend. It's just like, have a chat, whatever. Like, yeah. I can walk into some random bakery and be like, hey, how's it going? And they'll tell me all about their morning and like what their husband had for breakfast or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just that's a very different thing for me.
It's like that in the South too, like in Mississippi or Louisiana and any of those states at the bottom, like for all their flaws, you know, whatever they may be, there's something so wonderful about the Southern hospitality.
No.
Yeah.
Like you can just say hi to anybody. How you doing? You know, it's really like, yeah. Well, all right. I'm, you know, how you
but
doing?
But it was also for me a little bit weird moving to the city, or not when I was moving to the city, but having been to bigger cities in Germany as a child or as a teenager, because I also come from an area where you don't talk that much, but at least you greet everyone you see.
Mm. Berlin is particularly standoffish. Like, Berlin's like famous, infamous, should I say, for people being very grumpy.
Yeah, and
that can be worse than Munich, huh?
In Munich, people are also pretty grumpy.
Pretty grumpy.
But they drive the bigger cars.
But they have bigger cars and they have more money, so they're better than us.
Yeah, in Munich, they're rich and grumpy. Here, they're poor and grumpy. Yeah.
That's different. Oh, man. You know, if I were to tell an American or a native English speaker who's coming to Germany for the first time what the biggest difference is between Munich and Berlin, that's exactly how I would describe it. These guys are rich and grumpy. Those guys are poor and grumpy. Yeah. It's great. That's
and Hamburg, in Hamburg, they're just grumpy.
Hamburg is so funny. I feel like that would be like the one. Wouldn't that be like the one ungrumpy city? Like they have the port and they're so, I don't know, chipper.
Nah, it's always raining and windy there.
That's fair. I was only there like 2 days in my whole life, so it's not a great assessment.
Yeah, and talking about that other part, I often feel like, and I realize that more and more. Why it is that Germans feel so much, or at least that's what I experience, feel so much ashamed to talk about how they feel and how they're actually doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Unless it's someone that you're really close with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And in which case, and that's what I you come to respect that question.
Yeah.
How are you? A little bit more, because you only ask people that you really genuinely want to know the answer. It's not like for us where the answer just comes back just without even thinking about it. I'm good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Germany, when you say how are you, it really means like, tell me how you are. Like, be honest. No. You know?
Yeah. But even beyond that, like, I also realized that I still have this myself. Like that sometimes, I don't know, situation in the elevator. My boss asks me how my weekend was. And I feel weird telling my boss what I did on the weekend or how it was, even if I have a good relationship towards him.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
But still, it's kind of, I'm not sure, maybe it's because they...
It's like a respectful...
They separate more what goes on between people that really know each other well and are friends or family or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and kind of professional circumstances or...
Yeah. Is your boss also from Germany or somewhere else?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I was wondering if that was a cultural thing as well, if your boss was from an English speaking country and more. I don't know. But I think what you just said about separating the personal and professional, you can see that in the language as well, because you guys use formal and informal pronouns, which we don't have in English.
Is it true that it can cost you to use du with a police officer?
I'm not sure, but I can totally imagine it.
Wouldn't be surprised, yeah.
I found out that there's a fee for if you're driving and you flip somebody off. You flip them the finger.
Yeah.
I found that out because I did that.
Did you get a fine?
No. I didn't get a fine, but the person I was with was like, you get fined for that. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
The same guy's cut me off.
I did it, and someone was like, can't do that.
Yeah, I'm also not sure if it's that kind of myth, because I also never heard of somebody actually getting fined for it. And I also think, how should that work if the other guy...
You have to go through this huge process. Yeah, that's the thing.
And I wonder if it's rather a myth, because when you're driving and doing it, you always have someone driving with you who tells you you'll get fined for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
I don't know.
Do you,
there's a lot of fines for things, though.
Yeah, there's a lot of fines for things.
That's the other thing that I find strange about living here, is how everybody stands at the red light, even when there's no cars. Like, this is something I'm still not used to.
I make fun of that so much.
Yeah.
It's at night. No one's around.
Yeah.
Empty streets, and there's a little red walking light, and they're just there like...
Yeah, exactly.
Any minute now, you know?
And I think technically there's a fine for that as well, for walking along.
There must be.
On the red man.
As far as I know it, but that could also not be completely true, but you could also lose your driver's license for crossing a red light by bike or even as a pedestrian.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I think the bike thing is true. At least I've heard that as well. You can
something like that.
If you go through a red light as a cyclist, you can lose your license. Yeah, your driver's license.
Okay. I would have one very small. But
we don't want to touch on the topic of driving licenses.
Don't you get me started. Don't you get me
really?
Started.
Oh, really? Is that a sore spot?
I had some solo episodes on here last month or the month before, and I'm doing my driver's license here, and it's been such a nightmare. And finally, it's almost done. But
so you have to take the test here, or?
Yeah, I did all the theoretical. I did all the theoretical lessons, and then I took the theoretical test, and that was some drama there, and finally got through it. And then I did all my practicals, and now at the end of June, I will have my practical driving like exam. But I've been driving I was driving from like 15 to until 20. Yeah, so I drove for like 11 years, and then when I came here, I didn't drive anymore. So now I was like, why didn't I do that? I don't know why I didn't do it earlier, but. Now it's almost
it's
over.
It's cool to have it. I just got mine changed over. Like, I didn't have to do the test or anything.
But that's the bad thing about some states don't change over.
Right.
You know, I have one friend who has like an uncle in Utah and goes to get their license renewed there because there it works here. But Louisiana doesn't have the same.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, weird.
I know. It doesn't make any sense at all. It's America's so strange.
That's like,
sometimes
don't get me started on the bureaucracy. It's like
that
would be a whole different podcast episode that nobody would listen to.
Like much like my rant about the driver's license. Exactly. What I would do is I would ask more or less not rapid fire, but like a quick series of things here. I saw a little video that I thought was very true about things where you can tell if you've been Germanized.
Ooh.
And the things were named, and he didn't get me for all of them, but he got me for way more than I thought that he would. So I would round it out with this, and then we'll give you the chance to promote your new music. So here's maybe. I'm going to try and remember this off the top of my head, but...
You didn't write it down?
I think I got it, though.
Okay.
I think I got it. You can tell you've been Germanized if you tell strangers on the street either Guten or Mahlzeit. Have you ever done that?
Nah, that's also not... Mahlzeit's not as common in the north.
True, but any equivalent of that at all? Have you seen anybody eating anything and they maybe smile, maybe they're nice, and you go like, Guten.
Nah.
Okay. That one's fine. I don't do that that much either. I think I've done that one time. You have a new and important relationship or strong relationship with Sprudelwasser.
Oh, man, I can't live without it.
Were you a big fan before?
No.
Right?
I've been Germanized with that, yeah.
See, they got me there, too, because I thought, well, I don't love it, but I have no problems with it at all anymore. If it's the only thing that's there, I won't complain at all.
So you used to dislike it before?
I used to think it was... I mean, in America, it's considered very weird unless... It's like a fancier place. It's like, ooh, bubble water.
Yeah.
But here it's like, yeah, here's your water. And it's only bubble water.
Yeah. Sometimes water literally means water with bubbles.
That's, yeah.
In many places, you'd rather have to ask if you want water from the tap or just water without gas.
Yeah. That's crazy. One of the first things I learned in German as well. Mit oder ohne.
Yeah.
Right.
That's like someone was mit like, you gotta learn mit oder ohne. Yeah. And I was like, why? And she said, the water. Come on, man. Like,
give me some friggin' water. Yeah. You have another, you also have a relationship with house shoes.
Yeah, actually, that's a newfound. Yeah, I'm there.
Only in the last year. Now I wear them every day.
I also call them house shoes instead of slippers, which is what
right
really
house shoes
in English. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I call them house shoes, which is German, like translating it back from house shoe. Slippers. Yeah.
And finally, you know off the top of your head, the square meter, every square meter of your apartment, like how many square meters you have in your apartment.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I know how many square meters I have. Yeah,
I would never have known that at home. Like, oh, my house
nobody
is
knows
so many
that,
square
yeah.
feet, you know, whatever. But here no I know exactly that. To the dot how many square meters I have. Ah, I'm glad I
have actually. Yeah, that's a great question, because that's the same. Nobody ever knows that. Yeah. And I can now look at a room and kind of estimate how many square meters it is.
And the thing is, your brain goes like, your brain actually asks the question like, I wonder how many square meters this place is.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
I never did that before.
It's also automatically one of the first things you ask someone when you see their flat for the first time, like, how many square meters and what do you
how
pay for it?
How many square meters and what do you pay for rent? Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
I got asked that by a taxi driver the other day.
Wow. Okay, that's weird. Don't come up with a new stalker there.
Yeah. I didn't give him my address, so I'm learning. Yeah.
Where did he take you then? Where did he drop? Did you take you? No. Drop me off around the corner.
Good
around
question,
the corner.
Watson.
Yeah, where did he take you? Can't lie to us.
I was wondering if one of those questions was going to be, have you ever like told a cyclist to get off the footpath or a pedestrian to get out of the bike lane?
Oh, oh man.
That's like a hectic German thing, which I do now all the time.
I'll tell you a little story. I have, so I told you I had this radio show and I did this episode where I made fun of like these German behaviors. And I did a segment where, and it was pretty, it was pretty intense, but it goes to show how cool my boss is there. But so I did a segment where I said how much I hate this cyclist culture in Munich, and they all wear these like the spandex shirts that look like they're sponsored by like water and oil companies and stuff, and they have like the slick, you know, aerodynamic helmets and the clicky snappy shoes, and the problem is not that they do that. That's annoying, but it's not a problem. The problem for me is that they do this in the car lane and they ride side by side and they go like 20 kilometers an hour in a car lane in the city when the cars can go, you know, 80 or whatever, more 50, whatever. And that always annoys me that they just do that because they think they're important. They don't just take the bike lane. So as boring as I've just made that sound, I did a joke. I did a joke on the segment where I was like, you know, cause I talked about getting my license and I was like, when I see you pretentious cyclists taking up space in the road like you own it, it just makes me want to get my license faster so that I can run you over. Which
ouch.
Should have gotten that kind of reaction, just like, oh, damn. You know? But instead, I got this pretty brutal email from someone who had been listening to it, and they were like, you're promoting murderous violence in Germany, and they wrote the station to try and get me fired, and they said...
That's also super German to have that email coming in.
Dude, and they were like, maybe you can do this from the province you're from, but not in Germany.
Oh my God.
And I called my boss about it, and he was like, you know, you want to push some buttons? If they can't take it, that's their problem.
Cool. That's a cool boss.
It's a very cool boss. I was very grateful for that. Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
But the cyclists, that's for me, you know, like you said, a whole other episode no one would listen to would be the bureaucracy thing. For me, it'd be my complaints about the cyclists.
Yeah.
Do you follow, I guess this is a final question here, but do you follow on Instagram Berlin Ausländer memes?
I do. Yeah.
Genius.
They
I want to shake the
time.
Hand of whoever
yeah,
makes
they
that
really
page.
Do.
Oh my God. That's so funny. Everything they, on there. Is so
you got to put that in show notes.
Do you know the Alman memes?
Yeah.
Do you follow that one too?
I follow all my memes as
well.
That's
a great one too. That's a great one too. Okay, Georgie, this has been such an unbelievable pleasure. You're so funny. You're so sweet. And your music is great. We really appreciate that you took the time to be on our show and hope you had fun.
Super fun. Thank you so much. Cool. I've had a really nice time chatting to you guys. I feel like we've been mates for ages and we're just at the pub having a beer. So thanks for making me feel so comfortable.
That's awesome. That makes us feel really good. That makes us feel really good. So we're going to put links for everything in the descriptions for this video and on the audio podcast pages. But where can people find you?
Where can they find me? Well, I have a list of websites where you can find my stuff. I have my own website, georgiefisher.com. I'm on Instagram, Facebook as at Georgie Fisher Official. I'm on Twitter, although I don't use it really, but, you know, I have a Twitter account. And you can find my music, of course, on Spotify, Apple Music, Deezer, SoundCloud, anywhere else that you stream music. I'm there. And maybe I've missed something, but in general, you'll find me in most of those obvious places. So please come and say hi.
Nice. All right. Everyone, go check out Georgie Fisher's new singles, The Queen and Separate Realities. And yeah, thanks again so much. And we hope to have you on again in the future sometime, hopefully in person.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, that would be amazing. I would love, I'd love to actually have a take a seat at the table, have a chat.
Yeah, that would be really great. All right, everybody.
Super nice.
Let's wave goodbye then. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What a wonderful episode. If you enjoyed today's episode and you like our show, please go to Apple Podcasts, give us a subscription or a review or a comment. It really helps new listeners find our show. You can also follow us on Instagram at Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. We're also now on Facebook and on YouTube and on Twitter at Fartsy Artsy. No, at Artsy Fartsy Pod. We changed it at Artsy Fartsy Pod. Woo! So, yes, and if you want to financially support the show, you can go to patreon.com/JordanPrince, and where you can submit for as low as $3 a month some money to help us get this show bigger and better just for you. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Look out, baby. The Saints are coming through. And it's all over now.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von Jordan Prince und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.